everybody, and welcome to Alien Talk Podcast. This is where we discuss all things about aliens and UFOs, and where we always push the limits of our understanding. We are your hosts, Jill Landry and Roy Olford, here again to bring you a fascinating show out across the World Wide Web as we continue exploring the manifold topics surrounding the idea of extraterrestrial beings, the mystery of UFO encounters, the studies of paranormal occurrences, and other perplexing enigmas that make up this ever mysterious world in which we live. We're very glad to have you here with us for yet another great discussion. And as we've been saying, these last few episodes have taken us along a more metaphysical and parapsychological approach to looking into extraterrestrial beliefs that likewise go very deeply into our own religious beliefs. So for today's show, Rory is again joining us from Canada, where he is visiting family and enjoying the full 3 weeks of Canadian summer, which I'm sure, I'm not sure it's started up there yet, but Rory, it's good to be back on the show, and how's it going there?
Yeah, hey, Joe, yeah, it's going well. So far, it's been 2 days of summer, so I guess you can say, by Arizona standards, it's still like winter up here, but, it's a nice break from that summertime dry heat, so it's got to be getting pretty hot back there right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're getting pretty close to 100 degrees now. So I guess you can say you're not really missing anything new. Like Tatooine all over again. So keep your stick on the ice, right? They say that a lot up there.
Yeah, you bet. Especially with the hockey playoffs happening right now. And I'm rooting for the Vegas Golden Knights. So go Knights. Doing good so far. I think they just took the first game of the finals last night. So, hoorah. So yeah, keep your stick on the ice and also fill your boots.
You mean fill your boots, eh?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Fill your boots, eh? Well, you can put A at the end of pretty much anything. Sound Canadian, right?
Indeed. Anyway, we've already talked about this idea of there being a superconscious, which is a very abstract concept about humans being able to attain a higher level of awareness, as well as a higher level of intellect and understanding. It's something that transcends our empirical knowledge of the universe around us, much like how our beliefs about God do. And we sort of visualize it as occupying the space in which we exist, much like how we picture the internet, the cloud, Wi-Fi, and radio waves, signals being carried by electromagnetic energy that permeates the space around us, even if the distance of within that space can vary depending on what exactly we're talking about, whether it's a Wi-Fi router, which covers less than 100 feet, or satellite transponders, they cover thousands of miles, right? So we see this universal consciousness or universal soul as being everywhere throughout space. But what about time? That also is a measurable dimension of the cosmos, what's called a dimension in classical physics, also known as Newtonian physics. And we know that electromagnetic energy can be expressed as a function of time, just as it is a function of distance and location within space. So can the same be said about the processes of our minds and consciousness? What is its relationship to time, specifically linear time, which is what we as human creatures directly experience?
Well, we're all familiar with the idea of time travel. And of course, when we say time travel, we don't mean in a normal manner. Yes, we know that we are all traveling through time right now, second after second. What we mean is voluntary time travel, to be able at will, to skip ahead years into the future, like fast forward, or to go back several years into the past, like rewind. Obviously, we can do that in space, go from one place to another and then back again. Why can't we seem to do that with time? So we're stuck going in one direction, which is forward, at one rate, 1 second. Which is why it is considered to be a linear property. There's no going in circles or moving about at right angles, or is there? One of the things that are attributed to spirits and to God, who is said to be spirit, that they transcend time as well as space. Not only are they everywhere, but they are always meaning that they are present all the time at every time. They are not restricted by it, like whereas we are. So does this give us a clue to the superconscious? Could the existence of such an intelligence exist in the future and the past, just as it exists at the present? Then could information be passed from one point in time to another?
So today we're talking about stargates and portals. And I think everybody who, or anybody and everybody who has read science fiction classics like Robert Heinlein's Tunnel in the Sky and Arthur C. Clarke's famous 2001, A Space Odyssey, they're familiar with the concept of what they are and what they do, that being stargates and portals. Of course, they've also been depicted in quite a few movies, such as the series franchise by the name Stargate, from producer and director Roland Emmerich.
True. And when we hear the word Stargate, I'm sure most of us immediately think of that 1994 sci-fi adventure film starring James Spader and Kurt Russell. It has become a cult classic and a movie that I can watch over and over again. So in the film, the Stargate is a ring-shaped device that was on Earth in Egypt after being buried for thousands of years. And it is capable of creating a wormhole in which alien beings can travel through it by way of connection with another ring-shaped device somewhere else in the universe. It's done so well that it has spawned the release of others like Stargate SG-1, Stargate Atlantis, and Stargate Universe. And then there are the direct-to-DVD releases under the titles of The Ark of Truth, The Continuum, and Children of the Gods. And of course, we can't forget the animated series Stargate Infinity and web series Stargate Origins. But needless to say, it became a very big hit since the release of the original film.
Yeah, definitely. And what exactly are stargates and portals? Well, basically, they are a warping of the space-time continuum, so as to act as what you would think of as shortcuts throughout the cosmos, as they allow for teleportation, meaning matter and energy can do instantaneously travel from one point to another without physically traversing the space or time that is between those points. That's what Heinlein called the Ramsbotham jump. But to understand how that happens, we have to know something about black holes, wormholes, singularities, and event horizons. The idea here isn't to spend an hour getting into theoretical physics. A whole podcast series can be spent doing that. But to expand the universe as Albert Einstein did with general relativity. Now, this theory, which makes much of the masses have heard mentioned through school and in media, has also been brought up within the science fiction genre. Now, what it says is that gravity is not a force that was affected or is affected by space and time, which, according to Isaac Newton, space and time are fixed. And thus, with relativity, space and time thus act within those dimensions. Instead, what Einstein saw with gravity as it being derived from massive objects curving space. So with space being curved, the shortest distance between two points isn't going to be a straight line, but instead it's going to be an arc or a curve. And this had implications that even light would bend with gravity. Now, since in his special theory of relativity, Einstein's equation showed that the speed of light is a universal constant in relation to an object regardless of how fast it is traveling, which means that time is faster the more space is curved because of gravity. So time becomes distorted by gravity, just like space does.
Right. And his general theory also predicts that there are regions of space, and hence time, that become so distorted from curvature that gravity is so strong that even light cannot escape it. And this is known as a black hole. Now, Einstein saw space and time as something that could be bent by gravity, but he also saw it as being able to get sort of crumbled or crumpled if there was an object with enough mass. A black hole is like a whole lot of matter that's packed into a small region so that it contains an enormous mass and hence enormous gravity. If you can picture space-time as being like a large blanket or even a large rug, the gravity of the black hole would cram the whole blanket into the space of a pinhead. actually more like into the space of a molecule. At this point, the density of the matter is infinity, and the equations from physics can, you know, no longer predict what will happen. It is called a singularity, and it is where space-time has been broken down. So now, if there are two black holes that are connected by way of the curvature of space-time, then it becomes a wormhole. And theoretically, if something were to go into a black hole, it could come out of the other black hole and instantaneously be at a completely different point in the space-time continuum.
Right. The hypothesis of time or travel through such points was proposed in 1928 by German physicist Hermann Weyl as a one-dimensional tube within an electromagnetic field, which comes down to being closely tied to space-time, and that it could connect extremely long distances as well as relatively short ones. So the model of the space-time continuum is something multidimensional, where objects in the universe move through it on not linear, but curvilinear paths. And there are holes in it that can be taken to bypass those normal paths. Think of it as a Swiss cheese, but one that is shaped like a ball, which of course is curved. But there are a bunch of holes within the Swiss cheese, which conceivably can connect one side of it to another, a shortcut, if you will, but one that can take you backward as well as forward in space as well as time. Now, obviously, going through a wormhole is not without its hazards. If the gravity is strong enough to keep light from escaping, then it most assuredly can crush your body into a speck of dust. So the word wormhole was coined in the 1950s to what is really called the Einstein-Rosen bridge, from the mathematical equations that express the space-time curvature as being a function of gravity, and then so as to connect areas within the continuum. And an important aspect of that is something called the event horizon. This is another concept that has made its way into science fiction. There was actually a 1997 movie by that very name. And what it is the boundary beyond which effects cannot reach the observer. So to put it more plainly, information about what is happening beyond the event horizon cannot be obtained. There is no way to detect what is on the other side of a black hole. Scientists like Albert Einstein, Nathan Rosen, Carl Schwarzschild, and Stephen Hawking, to name a few, have predicted that the energy in a quantum field can be negative within a black hole, making it stable such that travel into it would allow for travel out of it in another place within space-time. This would then make it possible for the passage of matter through a wormhole. Apparently, a problem is that an object going through a wormhole could have enough gravity to cause it to sort of pull in on itself and thus collapse into the singularity. And someone it has to have the energy stability to stay open all the way so that an object can pass all the way through it to the other side of the black hole.
So while in astrophysics, wormholes are mostly theoretical, in other fields of study, they may represent the real likelihood that portals exist throughout the universe. Now, this would mean that there could be sensible explanations for much of the phenomena that humans have always experienced, whether paranormal, supernatural, or spiritual, and that it may be attributable to energy passing through them such that it instantaneously jumps across space and time. The portals are like windows or tunnels that connect different points in the cosmos, like you said, shortcuts. So what is meant by a stargate? Well, that would be a sophisticated device, a machine that can actually generate the energy needed to cause a portal to form at a desired point in space. As far as we know right now, they are the product of imagination.
Yeah. Now, of course, we do find descriptions from the Bible and other ancient texts that make us wonder what was being told by people in these stories. You know, take the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11, 5 through 9. It says that it was a structure that was being built so as to touch the heavens. So how was that done? Well, the scriptures imply that it was a tower constructed so as to be extraordinarily tall. The language of reaching to the heavens could suggest another meaning, that meaning being it reaches the heavens through a portal. which could allude to heavens, the word heavens being someplace not seen or reached by any normal physical means. It is possible that the whole thing is an allegory. And really, not much is said about the Tower of Babel. The passage talks about men settling in the plain of Shinar and building a city with a tower in it so as to make a name for themselves. God then confused their language so that they couldn't understand one another and then scattered them over the face of the earth. It's actually a rather strange anecdote from the Bible, and taken literally, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Was the Tower of Babel something like a ziggurat, which were like tower temples known to have been constructed by the Babylonians and Sumerians? That's normally how we think of it, right? But ziggurats were all over Mesopotamia in the 3rd millennium BC. What made this one so unique that it made the gods come down and stop people from working on it? Maybe it wasn't a literal tower, but instead a figurative tower that enabled access to another realm or dimension, which to the ancient mind would be identified as the heavens.
Yeah, good point. Well, I mean, the Bible claims that the tower was exactly that. It was a tower which reached to heaven. But, you know, we have to ask, well, how high did it go in order to reach heaven, right? Like, at what height were they going to stop? Was it 50 feet? Was it 100 feet, 200 feet? Was heaven thought to be the sky just overhead? Or was it further out in space? Or was it more like a Stargate?
Hey, you know, Laurie, I've always wondered about that. You know, how high was this Tower of Babel? It doesn't say in the scriptures. How high was it such that it got the Lord so annoyed? It certainly couldn't have been much taller than any other ancient structure, you know, like the pyramids of Giza. And it definitely wasn't as tall as the skyscrapers we have today. So it doesn't seem like it was the tower's height that was the problem. It seems like it was humanity's ambition to be like God, which, as we know, is what the scriptures say is our downfall. It was what initially brought sin into the world, and is why God is said in the Hebrew Bible to punish the nations the way he did. It's the arrogance. The arrogance may not have been in the way of constructing a big building, but the arrogance may have been in the way of constructing a special device that could make them godlike by reaching another realm.
Correct. And the reason we bring this up is because heaven may just be a portal that opened up in the sky where the ancient humans periodically witnessed extraterrestrial ships entering and exiting from it. And that's what they were trying to reach by attempting to create this sort of thing for themselves and thus, you know, to mimic the gods. And keep in mind that the name of a Babylonian temple of worship was called Babylu. Which means gate of God. In today's terms, all you have to do is put the word star at the beginning of that, and you get Stargate of God, which is what it may truly have been. Now, this event took place sometime after the Great Flood, according to the Bible. And like, you know, after all disasters, people tend to come together for the rebuilding of society to get things back to, you know, the way they were before. People would have been multiplying again and would have shared in a collective thought process, most likely because there would only be one language. And what they wanted to do was to build a tower that could reach to heaven. However, this was unacceptable to the gods. Yes, the gods, because that's how it is worded in the Bible when Yahweh says, come, let us go down and confuse their language. So sorry, guys, but this is not the Holy Trinity here, as we were raised to believe. There is no indication of this because there is no number as to how many people Yahweh was speaking to. Now, the belief of Christians around the world that this was the Trinity, it's only an assumption. There are other texts that support the notion that these were other gods speaking to other gods, such as the Sumerian god Enlil was speaking to angels, which are other gods, other ETs, to go down and destroy the city. And this is explained in full detail in the Lost Book of Enki, which is also by Zechariah Sitchin, that they did not want humanity to be united and, you know, progress as a civilization. They wanted to keep appearing as gods to humans for as long as possible, if not forever. So what we have here is an advanced extraterrestrial civilization manipulating and controlling humans. In Stargate, the movie, part of the plot is that writing became forbidden to humans after they challenged Ra and his overseers. Now, this actually sounds a lot like what is said to have happened in the book of Genesis. And humans learn too much and they get cocky to the point of defying the gods, so the gods put them back in their places by making it harder for them to gain knowledge.
Right. So, you know, I think in the movie, the Stargate would activate a portal, and that in ancient times, gods, notably Ra, a human-looking alien, would come to Earth and would take people who were enslaved to mine minerals for them and take them back to their homeworld and use their bodies to extend his lifespan. And in the movie, the people of the past revolted and overthrew the alien lords and buried the Stargate to prevent them from ever traveling through it to get back to Earth. So in this scenario, we have an advanced alien race that is seen by ancient humans as being the gods of Egypt, and they can come and go from here through a rift in the space-time continuum that is created by the Stargate machine. This allows them to make an almost instantaneous trip from their planet Earth, and thus save them from traveling millions of light years through interstellar space, which of course would take millions of years to complete. And that's if they could hit the speed of light with their starships. So the portal opened by the Stargate can get them from here to there in just a split second. So this would certainly relate to the belief that the gods are ever present and not bound by the limitations of space and time, because by traveling through the wormhole, well, they wouldn't be.
Of course, neither would we if we could travel through it. There was nothing special about those aliens. They weren't gods. They were just more technologically advanced. So it's certainly a very fascinating idea, discovering a relic of the past that turns out to be a portal to another world across the universe. The mystery of not knowing exactly what it is at first and then discovering that you can enter it and travel to another world without the use of the spacecraft. The movie and all that followed may be science fiction, but you know how much truth is in the fiction, right? I mean, we may have or we may not have yet found a Stargate that opens a portal to the other end of the universe or galaxy like in the movies, but is it possible that we may one day find something similar buried far beneath the sands of Egypt or even under the oceans? I would say that it's not impossible because we just don't know about it yet.
Well, you know, the Tower of Babel is not the only example of what, you know, we could use to kind of allude to a Stargate or a portal opening up. There's also the story of Jacob's ladder, you know, where angelic beings are seen by Jacob to ascend and descend between heaven and earth with a device, that device being a ladder. With Ezekiel's vision of the wheel in the sky, there are many features that seem to suggest that the prophet was catching a glimpse through a portal into another realm. Or how about in the book of Daniel, when the king, the Babylonian king Belshazzar, sees a hand appear out of nowhere and with its finger writes on the wall during his banquet. From where we get the saying, writing on the wall. Also, John the Evangelist looking before him to a door standing open in heaven as found in the book of Revelation. And when Jesus is baptized in the Jordan River, it says in the Synoptic Gospels that heaven opened and the Holy Spirit came down like a dove. This all sounds like what we would think of as being a portal. Also consider the story about Muhammad's night journey found in the Islamic Quran and Hadith, in which the prophet flies from Mecca to Jerusalem throughout the night on the back of a winged creature. Now, while it doesn't say anything about instantaneous travel, the distance separating Mecca and Jerusalem would require much more time than one night to make the trip by horseback. So something else got him there pretty quickly. And then after Muhammad gets to Mount Moriah in Jerusalem, it is said that he ascended the seven levels of heaven up on a ladder. So with all this imagery, we have to wonder if this is not an allegory about some misunderstood technology. Was the ladder mentioned actually something more like a Stargate that opened up a portal to connect to one to another place in time somewhere across the universe?
Yeah, I mean, you're right about all of that. I mean, the Bible is full of all this, the Bible, Quran, and all ancient texts. And I mean, we can't forget about the other famous one, which is the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus. You know, that was a portal that opened up and beings actually stepped out of it. And that was witnessed by the disciples that went with Jesus up to the Mount of Transfiguration, you know, and Jesus walking through walls and all that sort of thing. And you know, it's like we've been talking about for the past, what, 3 or 4 episodes now about, you know, the realms, different realms and portals and, you know, the hand coming out and writing on the wall, you know, was it all just, you know, just somebody's imagination? Or, I mean, if this really happened, then, you know, maybe some portal did open up and this hand just appeared. So you just never know. And I mean, there is Saul of Tarsus. He was later converted to become Paul the Apostle. Any Christian would know this story. He was on the road to Damascus, and he was blinded by a light from heaven. Now, did he see the opening of a portal where energy from some other point in space passed through? And in the Hindu and Jain traditions, we have the literature of the Mahabharata and the Ramayana that tell of how the kings of India of the Ishvaku dynasty during the 4th century BC had made regular trips between earth and heaven. And of course, we can't forget the account of Enoch, who, you know, from what is described, was teleported through outer space and got to see a whole lot of things sort of, you know, all at once. So are these examples of accounts that that were at first carried on by, you know, oral tradition about amazing technology and about phenomena of things like quantum gravity and general relativity, ideas completely unheard of to the ancients, such that when written down, present us with these miracles of the supernatural. It goes back to the basic premises of the ancient astronaut theory. Were all these incredible stories about gods and spirits nothing more than misunderstood technology that belonged to a highly advanced extraterrestrial visitors? If you recall, about a year ago, we did an episode on the 33rd parallel, which is another episode we recommend you all listen to, that one if you haven't already. But we pointed out how certain places on the globe seem to be like hotspots for extraterrestrial activity or, you know, supernatural activity, and also seem to coincide with places that are known as significant religious sites, such as, you know, Mount Sinai, Mount Hermon, Jerusalem, Mecca, you know, all of which seem to come close to that 33rd parallel.
Yeah, and I think what we said was that the mythological stories about some of these divine encounters at these holy places are because, you know, it seems like the 33rd parallel is like a hub for extraterrestrial activity, in which there was something like, you know, akin to flight paths by which the ETs would travel back and forth from space to Earth. The extraterrestrials being the gods, of course. Now, it could also be that these regions along the 33rd parallel are also where portals are prone to materialize, and thus this is where beings from other worlds would be seen to come and go to Earth, just like how we saw in the movie. So the idea of making a wormhole form at any desired point in space has for quite a while seemed virtually impossible. But according to Brandon Foster with the magazine Scientific American, dated May 21st, 2021, a research breakthrough at Harvard University into quantum entanglement, and that involves an interconnection of subatomic particles across a substantial distance, has allowed for the creation of an Einstein-Rosen bridge in which matter can pass through it. Now, it is only microscopic. It's not like something you would see in the movies where people can go through it and ships can go through it. But this illustrates that with the right knowledge about gravity, quantum mechanics, and singularity, the technology can possibly be developed that can enable, perhaps someday, someone to control how space-time curves at a particular point so as to facilitate the passage through it, sort of like going through a tunnel.
Yeah, and so Clark's novel that you mentioned earlier, The Tunnel in the Sky, has a great title, because when we think of a portal, a tunnel comes to mind. I believe we talked about this in our Bermuda Triangle episode, where some people claim that a tunnel or vortex appears to swallow up unsuspecting aircraft and ships. Now, did many of these missing ships and airplanes possibly end up on another planet? Perhaps they entered a wormhole and were transported to another place somewhere else in the universe, or into a point maybe in the future time period somewhere. Now, in their book, The Origins of the Gods, authors Andrew Collins and Gregory L. Little write about the path of souls and the journey to the stars, which in which they describe how in Native American culture, souls move to the Milky Way and travel north and refer to this route as the path of souls. Eventually, the soul arrives at a crossroads split in the Milky Way, where it meets a giant raptor or eagle looking bird that is considered to be, some form of a celestial judge, and that it is also in the constellation Cygnus, which is the swan. So, this judge, whether raptor, eagle, or swan, is a bird, and that it is identified with the brightest star in Cygnus, known as Deneb. It seems to correspond to what is thought of as a portal in the sky that connects to another world. Now, Collins and Little allude to a relationship between the constellations Orion and Cygnus that was sacred to the ancients. And this is taught by the shamans throughout the many, many generations. And they also mentioned that the North Star was of importance to ancient cultures and was believed to be the entry and exit point of the sky world. What's even more interesting, though, is that for years, astronomers have known about a black hole that existing in the constellation Cygnus. And it's called Cygnus X1, and it's about 6,000 light years from Earth. And according to Charles Choi with space.com, an article dated February 19th of 2021, astrophysicists now think that it is a larger black hole than previously thought. And it was discovered in 1964, but did the ancients know about its existence long before modern astronomy did?
Right. Cygnus X1 is considered to be the first object identified as a black hole from its strong emission of X-rays, but perhaps it was known to be there for a long time and then forgotten, as much knowledge was during the, the so-called Dark Ages, only to be discovered again in modern times by modern scientists. But all of this also, raises the question about how information can pass through space and time through this sort of skipping over the distance, so to speak. Could it be that the ancient people who were known to be seers and soothsayers and prophets, that they are the ones who had been tipped off, so to speak, about things that are to happen by these beings who have traveled through wormholes from points in the future to points in the past, so as to tell certain people about what will happen? Or could those human prophets have themselves traveled from points in the past to points in the future and then back again with this information that they obtained about what is going to happen? And when we look at the prophecies of, say, Nostradamus, we see that they're very detailed and lavish. Now, granted, there is much dispute out there on the accuracy of his predictions. I, for one, am not a huge fan of Nostradamus, but you can't help but wonder about some of the details, even if they may be vague and even they may be subject to individual interpretation. These details that he does provide are extraordinary. He was clearly in a deep meditative state when he composed what are his famous quatrains. He wrote nearly 1,000 of them. And even if a lot of it is incoherent, he was definitely getting vivid images going through his mind about something. When he was 46 years old, Nostradamus became fascinated with the occult. So, many of his supporters to this day believe that he found the ability to see into the future. Ironically, the vaguer the prophecy, the more people seem to fit it into how any given event is unfolding. So could this in some way be thought of as someone receiving information from a wormhole kind of portal, which would not be perfect in how it was delivered or in how it is comprehended? And is this why prophetic visions always seem to be so nonsensical with the way they're written?
Yeah, and that's a good point, delivered or in how it is comprehended, because he didn't have the vocabulary either to explain a lot of these things. So that's why maybe some of that's why these things sound so incoherent. That's because he just didn't have the wording to describe these things that he did see. But I know what you mean, Joe. I mean, I'm not a big believer in Nostradamus predictions either, but you know, something was going through this man's head when he was writing all of those quatrains. I mean, we always have to remember that people back then completely lacked the understanding of any type of technology that would, you know, have been seen from a future time frame. So they would describe it as best they could in with the you know, semantics of the time. Therefore, it shouldn't be surprising to find that much of it is, you know, gibberish. Now, when we come across descriptions of souls taking a path to heaven, you know, we have to wonder what would those paths most, you know, reasonably be, considering the ancient writers provided no other details about them. It seems from what we know, or what we now know about physics and astronomy, that those pathways are most likely references to possibly wormholes. That is the pathway to travel that the gods travel to get to the heavens. You know, it's where the gods live. It's where they go. And of course, misunderstandings and incorrect descriptions and inadequate replications just abounded. So just think of how the Egyptians prepared, you know, dead bodies during their embalming practices. You know, they prepared them for their journey to the stars, just like their gods were prepping for spaceflight. They mimicked this incorrectly, no doubt, but anyway, they did so thinking it was what the gods did when departing the earth. So if the dead were going to also depart the earth, they needed to do the same thing. Actually, it's kind of comical when you think about it.
Yeah.
According to a blog labeled Babylon, Gate of the Gods, found on a Tupu log or tupublog.wordpress.com, this was dated August 27, 2017. It says that the ziggurat in Babylon was referred to as Itamenanki or Itamenanki, which means temple or the foundation of heaven and earth. So this makes me think now of our episode we did about ancient spaceports and about them being sacred ground, because these temples could have been commemorated places where there were, you know, once landing pads for extraterrestrial ships. Teotihuacan in Mesoamerica, for example, is known as the place where, you know, gods were created. But it also means city of the gods. So, I mean, the true translation can mean that the city, it be the city where the gods created. So each pyramid there looks as if, you know, the tops are for something to land on or flat. And maybe the Anunnaki used Teotihuacan as one of their cities to complete their work around the planet with, you know, like Baalbek and Giza, Puma Punku, you know, being some of the other places.
Right. According to the ancient peoples, these would all be considered cities of the gods. Yeah.
Right.
You know, you have to wonder something like one of the reasons why. Or the reason why we're not tracking UFOs or UAPs coming to Earth on flight paths from other planets, you know, why SETI, after almost 50 years, hasn't detected any intelligence signals out there in space. And you have to wonder if that's because that these ETs are appearing here, not from traveling, you know, from beyond the moon or from beyond Mars, but because they're getting here from wormholes.
Yeah, that just may be the case. They may just be arriving and departing by portals in space that, you know, we as of yet still lack the ability to detect. I mean, that actually is a fairly feasible explanation. It was on July 2nd, 2012, that NASA TV aired a video, and it was called Hidden Portals in Earth's Magnetic Field. They explained that a good portal is a shortcut and that they may actually exist, and a University of Iowa researcher may know how to locate them. They refer to these portals as X points or electron diffusion regions, and it's supposed to exist in magnetic fields of Earth and the sun, which, you know, creates a non-interrupted path from Earth to the sun's atmosphere. Now, NASA has observed that these things are around tens of thousands of kilometers from Earth, and most of them are small and they don't live very long, while there are others that are massive and they, you know, I have and they're open longer. There's lots of energy or energetic particles enter, and they can actually heat up Earth's atmosphere. Now, tons of data have been collected from NASA spacecraft over a decade, and a plasma physicist named Jack Scudder found the X points, which he believes are the signposts that lead to where these things form. So, I mean, who's to say that some advanced extraterrestrial civilization didn't already know about this on a higher level and decided to use it in coming here? If NASA was able to detect these types of wormholes with our technology, then what about the advanced aliens? Like, you know, they may know exactly how to operate or manipulate wormholes to be used to their advantage.
Well, you know, it's important to keep in mind that, you know, while this the idea of portals existing such that they allow non-linear travel through space-time and they get from one point to the galaxy to the other almost instantaneously, it may seem far-fetched. But the thing is, it is actually based on pretty sound theory. You know, Einstein's concepts on both special relativity and general relativity are well accepted among the leading scientists of the world.
Yeah, for sure. His work has been demonstrated and has for about what the last 80 years considered to be the correct model for understanding the universe. Relativity is real. Space-time warping is real. Black holes are real. So the part of the theory that explains wormholes could just as well be real. And they are real. And then the thought that they, like, you know, wonders of physics like lasers and radio waves, nuclear energy, et cetera, can be harnessed by technology, then the thought that something like a Stargate can be built to control a wormhole is not that far off the mark.
Exactly. And even though we don't fully understand things like singularity or quantum entanglement or even gravity, for that matter, the veracity of the mathematical extrapolation of space and time being curved is very compelling. The theory of relativity, along with quantum mechanics, seem to be how the cosmos works. Newton's model of classical physics hasn't seemed to cut it for the past century. Instead, it has been Einstein's model. So there's at least a very good chance that wormholes are real. So that will do it for today. We thank you all for joining us. Our next show will be on Father's Day, or right before Father's Day. We'll try to get the recording done before Sunday so that, you know, Lori and I can spend a day with the kids and the grandkids and everybody, and hopefully they spoil us. You know, it should be Father's Month, in my opinion.
Yeah, right. I agree. Every day should you know, should be Father's Day, especially when you think about all the to-do lists we have.
No kidding.
Yeah, so next episode will be about NASA and UFOs. There are a lot of things going on up above our skies and beyond our planet that NASA, Pentagon, the CIA, and who else? Elon Musk. they are not sharing it with us. And it has long been believed that there has been a secret space program going on. And we would like we would all like to find out more about what, you know, what that may entail.
Yeah, and NASA has always been very elusive about any topic pertaining to UFOs or extraterrestrial life. Of course, there are other organizations around the world that are also very elusive about it, but, you know, many of them are so clandestine that we probably never even heard about them. Like, what's going on in China, you know, in terms of what they know. But NASA is the one here in the U.S. that is responsible for getting assets up into space, and everybody in the public knows about them. So if any group has firsthand information about UFOs that are out there in space, it'd have to be NASA, right? But they don't ever want to say anything. Man, go figure. So we hope you all have a great couple weeks before we meet you again. We hope you all join us again for the next show. Until then, stay curious.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. And don't forget to check us out on Facebook and our website, www.aliantalkpodcast.com. So everybody take care and have a safe week.